The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
My name is Jonathan Derbyshire. Friends call me Derby because my last name is Derbyshire. So you guys can call me Derby if you'd like. I am originally from Arizona, but grew up in Thailand. My parents are still with the International Mission Board. They've been there. It's their 25th year. So I served 2.5 years with the IMB and work on Zach Lyons' People's Next Door team. So I work with Buddhists across the state, specifically with Thais. I'm fluent in the language, so we're trying to see churches planted in Thai. And we've got a lot of work ahead of us. The challenge that we're facing right now in the States is we've got all these immigrations coming in. That's what they're kind of learning about, right? We've got all these internationals coming, and we want to serve them. We want to find ways to get to know them, to get them into our churches. But one of the things that we're having challenges with is figuring out what's the balance between me serving and then me actually getting the gospel to them, right? And we're actually having the same problem overseas with our missionaries, is that they're having, how do we get into these communities if we don't come in doing medical missions or doing language or doing whatever that might be. And so now we really wanted to provide, our team wanted to provide a way for us to discuss what are some ways that we can balance this better, this idea of deeds and words, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to go through some scripture today. It's going to be very much discussion-based because I do want us to pour out or to get the information out of you and have it to be some of your ideas as well. And then I'll help guide those discussions and help guide us into okay, what are some practical things that we can do? All right. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to divide you into two groups, and one's going to be over here, and one's going to be over here. I hope someone has Bibles. Do we have phones? Yeah, that's fine. I do not discriminate on e-Bibles. If you. So yeah, so what we're going to do is if we can, one group, a Bible between the two groups is fine. And I'm going to have you read those two passages together and then come together, and then you're going to answer these four questions. Okay, I'm going to give us 10 to 15 minutes to do this. This will help us gauge and see, okay, how were things in the New Testament? How was Jesus doing his ministry? And what was the focus on those things? Okay, and then we'll come back together in 10 to 15 minutes. I'll come around if you guys have questions. But really, have you heard of the sword method Bible study? You're answering basically four questions. What does this passage tell you about God? So what are we identifying about God, his heart, his mission? What does this tell you about man? The sinful state of man, maybe our tendency to rebel, whatever that might be. What should man be doing? So what's a command, maybe? Command would be that we should be doing, that we're not doing. And then over here is what are some examples to follow? So who can we identify specific things for us to follow or imitate today? Does that make sense? So what I'm going to do, let's see, we'll have you two will come over here. And then Pastor Mike, is that right? Pastor Michael. And we'll have actually all three of you right here. Come on over here and you'll come to this section. And I'll explain. Okay. What you're doing is you're going to look at this passage of scripture, and your group was just going to come and answer these four questions. And what might help is when you're answering these questions, you can kind of think specifically on the topic of serving others or reaching others. That might help a little bit on a direction. And I will let you guys know again when we'll come back together. Okay, so in just a second, I'm going to have each group kind of give like a quick summary of what you found. But before we do that, from your reading, the most two obvious questions come out, and the answers should be pretty obvious. You know, one thing that we see, should the church be showing love? Should it be going to the marginalized, the immigrants, and the poor, and helping them? Should they? Yes. Yeah, absolutely, right? So, very clear. We need to be doing that. And then the other question is, should the church be reaching those people, the same people, and be sharing the gospel to them? Yes. Yeah. So those two are obvious. Again, like we talked earlier before we started this, it's obvious that we need the two, but then what are we doing to get those, right? So from Mark 1, we'll start over here, the Mark 1 group. Briefly tell us what the story was, and then a little bit about the information you gathered from the story, from those four categories.
spokesperson?
Well, I guess it's all going together, but shouldn't Jesus leaving the synagogue, entering the Simon's, and Andrew and James, how the house of Simon, Andrew and James, John, Simon's wife was sick, healing her, and coming out at sunset, healing other people, for the next morning getting up, so the continuation of Jesus just being, just going through the day to the next day, just killing one people, one person, and then people still coming and coming to him.
Right. Yeah, just continuing. Does he have a focus in his ministry? In this, what's his focus?
His focus is, I believe his focus is at the end. Let us go into the next town that I may preach.
Yeah, so it seems like Jesus is doing a lot of healing, right? He's doing a lot of needs-based. He's doing a lot of this caring type ministry. But his focus is, let's go to the next town so we can to preach the word so that, because that's why I'm here, right? That's pretty, we see him working his tail off to serve, but he says his focus is word-based, right? I came here to share the gospel. I came here to share about myself, right? So over here, Luke 10, give us a little bit about the story and then kind of what you saw.
It's the Good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it, right? I can tell you the story.
That's fine, yeah. The Good Samaritan story, and then what did we find out about ministry, like type of ministry there?
Well, it just, we know that God's concerned about and loves everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it tell us about man? Well, some of us are in too much of a hurry. Some of us just don't want to get involved because it might cost too much or really interfere with our plans. We are judgmental, whether we want to think we are or not. And what should man be doing? Well, what the Samaritan did. He had eyes to see. He actually did something. He cared enough to get involved.
Yep.
And he did it financially and personally. And not only that, he followed up and he came back.
Mm-hmm.
And so what examples do you see that we should follow? Just pretty much everything that the Samaritan did.
Okay, great. So again, we see these two, the balance of the two. With the Samaritan, did he get a chance to preach the gospel? I mean, not really. You know, do we know if the Samaritan would have, even if he had a chance? We don't know. What we do see is we have a contrast a little bit. And then we see kind of, actually, if we look in our churches and if we're honest, we have people in our church who are very good at preaching the word, but not good or not as good as serving the needs. I mean, this guy gave till it hurt and then gave some more, right? And we try to preach to our churches, we try to preach to our people and those around us, we need to be giving until it hurts and then give a little bit more, right? And so we have that mentality, but then we have servants in the church, right? We have those who will say, well, I'm gonna wake up at 5 a.m. just to make breakfast for someone or just to do all these things. And so we sometimes will say, okay, well, that means, you know, Johnny over here is going to be a servant and he's going to be in charge of that team going over there. And then we've got, you know, Sally or whoever who's good at serving. So she's going to lead up the serving group. And then we have this issue is now we've said, we're just putting two different teams on it. But really, we need to put those together and we need to find out how we're going to put these gifts together to make more holistic ministry, right? So kind of what we've come up with, the most important part of this is how is our any type of our ministry feeding into discipleship, right? So we talk about, if I can ever get this thing to work, there we go. Discipleship plans, right? Or discipleship, everyone has a model. I'm gonna walk through this model. I know it looks intense, but I'm gonna walk through it because what's important is we need to be able to take any ministry, whether ESL, whether, you know, immigration help with paperwork or, you know, U.S. citizen classes, that type of thing. We need to make sure that we can push it into a discipleship model. And I would say if we don't have a discipleship model, these two things could never be married together. And if they do, they'd be really forced and very challenged, very difficult, right? Because what we see in Jesus's ministry is all this like, you know, discipleship, making new people. He's building up his disciples, right, to then go out and build more, right? So what we have here is a chart that's called the ASAP discipleship plan. All right, right here we have Jeff and Jennifer, and you know I'm almost sad because they need to have smiley faces. There we go. Let's get a little happiness in the room. And they are Jesus followers. Okay, so these are two people who love the Lord, and they're starting as Jesus followers in abiding, right? So we've got people in our church, we've got people around us who are abiding through prayer and studying of the Word, right? And that's kind of based in John 15. Well, they go out. Okay, now they're going out, and they're going to meet two types of people. What kind of people do you think they're going to meet? Lost people. Saved people. Yeah, saved and unsaved. So they have two options in this second one. This is called seeking. They're seeking out new people. If they find a saved person, they're going to enlist them to go along, which is probably what you're going to be doing after this conference, is enlisting people to come alongside and create ministries to reach those. Okay? And then we have evangelism. This is going into communities. This is going to the lost and sharing the gospel with them, right? So you've got entry, evangelism, and then two passages here that kind of help focus on that, right? And then once you've found these people, once you've identified them, you go into discipleship, right? There's two levels of discipleship in a broad sense. You got milk, which is going to be the baby believers, right? And then you got meat, which is going to be those who are a bit more mature, right? So you have this discipleship. And in the same section here as applying, you're going to have those who go out. So they're going to go out too. And you have two groups. You kind of have the shepherding teaching type, and they're the ones that are going to be enabling, digging deeper into the abiding process, into the growing process. And then you have what we call APE, kind of that apostle, prophet, and evangelist. And they're going to be on the forefront who are going to be growing the church out. Right, so these are going to be oftentimes be your missionaries or the ones who are gifted most with sharing the gospel. Okay, and then this is an arrow, and arrows, you're trying to hit what? A target, right? So our target is reproducing healthy communities. And then you've got in these, you have bunches of Jeffs and Jennifers who are making these different communities go out. And this is called planting. And this is what you do it by modeling and equipping. Okay, so this is a discipleship model. And we can use this to help analyze how are we doing? How is our ministry doing? So what I want us to do is to pick a ministry that you see as being kind of a deeds ministry for immigrants that we're doing, and then we're going to try to plug it in here and see what we're doing and how we're doing with that. Does that work? Does that make sense? Okay, so let's come up with what's something that we do ministry-wise? Pardon? ESL? Yeah, okay, ESL is a great one. All right, how can we take ESL and make it fit more into this model? How can we make it seem like, we're meeting needs, but we also need to give them the word. So meeting needs, getting the word.
Use biblical language.
Yes, biblical language, okay. So really what we're working on here too is curriculum, yeah. Right? What are we using? How are we getting it? I mean, yes, there's a way that we can go overboard, right, and give them way too much gospel on the front end, sure, right? But really what we need to be thinking is we need to revitalize our curriculum that we use and then find ways to bridge into it well, where we're not oversaturating, but we're definitely not just stopping at ESL, getting them to pass whatever class they need to get passed, right? Okay, so what are some other things that we can be doing in ESL differently, or we might need to be rethinking?
Well, I think you've got to have the heart for it, and you go in with the right motive, the right attitude, and just by that very being there, you're willing to be. You're showing the love of God to them in your actions.
Right.
That are helping them. You don't have to be there.
Yeah, you don't have to be there. So going in with the right motives, you can pick a phony from anywhere, right? So going in with the intentions of sharing. But you also have to teach your people that, right? You'd have to teach anyone, like, okay, when we go in here, what's our intentions? What are we trying to do? We're trying to get to the gospel. But at the same time, we still need to give him those needs. We still need to teach him ESL with the hopes of doing this, right? Okay, what are some other things that you can think of? ESL, what do we do? Where do we do ESL, usually?
School.
At the school? At a school?
I think my sister's church.
You do?
Church does it at their church.
At the church, right. So I think we might want to start thinking about, I say I like the idea of doing the school because it's a neutral location, right?
But our school does it.
Your school does it?
It does.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, wow. So it's done by teachers.
Yes.
So it's done not necessarily from our...
Yes,
from
teachers.
Yeah, so you can't do anything to their curriculum.
Right, exactly. But what you can do is use that as an entry, right? So we're talking about entry here on this part. When you've got your... Man, those are creepy faces. When you get them coming out and they're entering. And if you think of it that way and you say to your people, you say, hey, let's go in this... Maybe we'll call it secular. We're going to go into this curriculum, and that's fine. But all we're doing is we're trying to build these relationships, like so that we can maybe do something else. Maybe we can throw a block party for everyone who was in the ESL and just say, hey, our church is going to adopt this ESL program. And then when they're done with their sessions, you can just say, hey, at the end of the month, talk to the school, say, hey, can we throw some type of party, right? So that's one thing with ESL that we can be doing, some things we can be doing at ESL, right? What are some other things you can think of?
Terminology for, but when, like, if somebody gets there early, you just love them, talk to them, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I've done this, and usually they don't have the language at that point,
right?
To be able to.
And I think that really brings up the big question is, you know, and even with ESL, I mean, how do you even gain this when you can't even communicate with them?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And oftentimes it means it takes longer. So, like, it just does. It takes longer to get through here. But I can also tell you from being overseas in a country where I don't speak the language, right. You know, and there's nothing I can do, or someone else, there's nothing I can do but to keep loving on them and to keep seeking and then praying. Because what we're doing is, it's very easy for us to be overwhelmed. It's very easy to say, well, I mean, we want to make, I mean, our goal is to see churches planted in their mother tongue, in their mother language, right? That's our goal. I mean, this is the whole point of Jeff and Jennifer as Jesus followers is Revelation 7:9, right? Where we've got every nation, people, language, and tongue sitting before the Lord. And I don't know if any of you were at the luncheon, nations or the heavenly banquet thing, but one of the things that they said was, you know, when we get to heaven, for people who don't have a mindset of reaching the immigrants or reaching the nations and that kind of thing, they might be very uncomfortable with heaven because of all the nations there. You know, I mean, obviously I know Jesus is going to, you know, we're going to have all that new stuff. But I think it's a great point to think about is, okay, how are we doing that? You know, like, is that our vision? And so if that's our vision and we're trying to get, you know, to them and that language is the issue.
What's the same argument that with music? People could say, well, church would be fine if we just get rid of music. Well, you know, if they don't like to worship God, they ain't gonna like heaven.
Right.
It's the same point.
Right. And so you do have these issues, and that is gonna be always a problem with the language. But I will tell you this, if we can make sure, if we found a way that every immigrant who doesn't speak English came to America and the first faces they saw and the first people that served them were loving believers, that would change the world. I mean, it would change everything. Because eventually they are going to learn English. And oftentimes they have kids who have been growing up, let's say if they're refugees, okay? Parents probably don't speak English very well, or if at all. But their kids are growing up in our schools. You know, 15% of schools across North Carolina are foreign-born. 15% of them. And a lot of that is going to be, those are going to be our translators. Those are going to be the people that, those are the students that we're going to try to raise up. And we do stuff with our kindergartners, we have curriculum for them and getting the gospel, right? I mean, if they're learning English, the kids are probably at the same level, you know? Read this book or whatever. It's just like, you know, God created, you know, day one, God created. Day two, God did this. You know, and so you can use those things to try to still get them. But it is overwhelming. I agree. When you don't have the language, what do you do? And I think that there comes a point when part of the examples part is we just have to do what we see commanded, right? So Matthew 28, I didn't have a group on that, but that's very clear. go into the nation, you know, go tell them, you know, go and teach them to observe all these things, you know, so we know that's what we need to do. And so at some point we got to find a way. I was sitting in South Asia and I was like, man, I got to be here for 6 months. I don't speak the language. And I can remember sitting there going, oh, six more months. What do I do with that? And the Lord provided. And the Lord provided. Okay.
Let me see what that is. When you list, if you have, you need to try to list people that have, hopefully, if you're able to list someone that can speak the language you're working with.
Right. Right.
And if you don't have somebody that can actually speak the language of some part of your mind, you need to list some kind of a tool.
Translator. I get you.
Yeah.
Gideon's International, others. I got a Gideon's International ramps and it app, and I can translate the Bible with 100,000 languages. Either translation on the phone or gospel tracts in their language. You have to enlist either a person or a tool to at least, you might not be able to hold a conversation, how you doing today, what's going on, but at least you can communicate some truth, know the truth before you
depart. Right, and that's the deal. And sometimes maybe we have an encounter, you know, let's say I'll be an international for this, and you say to me, you want to share the gospel. You want to get as simple as creation of Christ. I mean, I can draw a picture of creation of Christ and have it make sense, right? But you're thinking, it might not take that first time. You know, it might not, maybe it does take that building up. I mean, if we're doing sports camps, right? I mean, sometimes it takes how many games? You know, I mean, if we have a stat, it's like if you're talking to a Buddhist, it takes them five to seven years to even consider fully in their heart if they're going to receive Christ or not. I mean, that's an absurd number. And that's just because, you know, we're dealing with tradition, we're dealing with all these things, and we can't let language be a barrier or scare us. I mean, because it is inevitably a barrier. But we can't let it scare us away from getting the word somehow. And that is why it's so important that no matter what our ministry is, we're trying to find a way. And I think as a church, it's very important to say, what's our discipleship plan? Well, on our people. Like, I mean, this works in every context. In America, overseas, you know, whatever you want to do, this works. And so if you had even a simpler model, just start thinking, okay, well, how? I mean, we have to do this all the time if we're going to teach the word. It's like, how is preaching part of discipleship? You know, and now all we're doing is we're throwing in something new and saying, when we think about working with immigration or immigrants, when we think about that, how is our long-term perspective, right? So, for instance, here's another example that we'll go through really quickly, and I'll give you some time to fill out your evaluations and then answer questions. One of the big ministries that I have found to be almost needed is this restaurant ministry. So a lot of the people groups, like I work with Thai Lao, I speak their language, like so I have to go where they are. And they work 60 hours a week in a restaurant. So how am I supposed to get them in an ESL class? Or how am I supposed to get them playing sports with me or catch them at the park if they're working 60 hours a week? So now the mindset is, okay, now I got an entry, right? So now we know I can go to the restaurant. Well, I mean, if I go there every day, yeah, I could build some sort of relationship. But if it's busy, you're not going to be able to talk to them. You're not going to be able to talk to them about their culture, their religion. And so then you start strategizing. Okay, how in the world am I going to get to a point where I can talk to them about the gospel by doing that? Well, every restaurant has downtime, right? And I did this. I thought to myself, I went to this restaurant and I went to the servers and I said to him, he was a sushi chef. It's hard to say really fast. And I asked him, I said, so you have regulars that come through here? He said, yeah, man, I do. I said, really? How long have you been working here? He said, I've been working here for 20 years. And I said, okay, tell me about your regulars. He says, well, I got a family. He's been coming in here for 14 years. I was in both their kids' weddings.
Wow.
And this is a Thai guy. This is a Thai guy. And I was thinking to myself, what if we changed our mindset on building these relationships in such a way that they're in our families like that? They're in our kids' weddings. They're, you know, doing whatever that we're doing. That maybe we're taking them fishing. Maybe we're taking them hunting. Whatever that might be, you know, how can we do that? How can we reach this restaurant? And we're hoping in the future to be able to develop kind of a a plan or a helpful strategy on how to engage. So like right now I teach a Thai Bible study in a Thai restaurant, and they're only able to meet from 2:30 to 5 p.m. because that's when their restaurant closes. And so I'll go in, eat 1:50, and then hopefully they'll let me stay and keep talking to them, right? So all that to say, we need to rethink about our ESL or immigration, like helping with their paperwork or helping with getting their driver's license and stuff in such a way that we're being personal enough to where we can get going through here. Does that make sense? Are there questions on that?
No.
Or ideas?
We just have to realize it's going to take time.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's why we put down on hours. Sometimes it just might interfere. It takes too much time. You don't want to get involved because you know it's going to take.
Yeah.
Like, do I want to invest that much of my time?
Right. And I think what can help with that, and I've kind of found this to be with churches when I'm talking to pastors and trying to see how do we get there? You know, how do we do something? And sometimes it's hard to get the whole church on page, like on the, you know, because they're all like, man, that's way too much to talk about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's like, I'm not going to be able to get the majority. So how can I find some, and probably the pastor is the busiest person. I mean, he's going to be the busiest, right? And they're like, I can't lead up every ministry. So it's almost like you pick, and we do this across the convention where we'll have committees on everything, right? We try to put these committees together so we can focus on this. But instead of doing like a committee, maybe you have a small group or a Sunday school class in your church, and you can just say, hey, what do you guys think about this? And make it be a burden. Make it be a team effort. There's this, for instance, there's this church in Arkansas. I was a video producer for the IMB, so I went all over telling these stories and filming them. And I was with this pastor, and what he has done with this church is it took them 7 years. But they adopted a people group, and they made it like their identity as a church. And they prayed about it every day or every Sunday. And they did all this stuff where they made it an identity. They put the pictures of the people group, you know, in their foyer. So people, it was on their minds. Their Sunday school classes were thinking about them. And so maybe it might be a Sunday school or class, or even as a church, you just make this identity of like, guys, this is going to be our people. And we're going to do it so well, whether it takes 7 years. And I love the quote from that pastor was, well, we were thinking about giving it up because it's been 7 years and we haven't seen a believer. And he said, we've been doing that. And he says, and I realized in my quiet time that you don't adopt someone and then unadopt them. You know, you adopt them until it's complete. You adopt until it's finished. And so what they did was they just kept praying, and because they felt like the Lord called them to that task. And eventually this huge church planting movement happened in India because of it. I mean, it was amazing. It was a complete miracle. It was amazing. But it was because they were willing to, as an identity, do that to the point where, okay, that work is finished. Now we can work on the next, right? And so I was talking to a missionary from India downstairs, and people said, well, do you feel called to be in your city for the rest of your life in South Asia? And he goes, well, I mean, I was like, do you want to be there? He's like, well, I mean, I sort of, but not really. Because I really want to be able to get to the point where it's done so I can go to the next town and do the same thing. And so I think that's got to be our mentality as well when we're thinking about reaching these nations. Okay, I'm going to give you some questions, just some helpful questions just to think about. And then you'll have time to do your surveys. And then if you can hand them back in, we'll be done. Does that sound okay? Because I know that we're running out of time. All right, so here's some questions. What if, instead of looking for ways that we can serve the immigrants, we looked at ways that they can, and listened for ways that they could, we could be served by them? So kind of, it's kind of a weird thought. Like, okay, we want to serve them, but what are some ways that they could serve us? Maybe it's come into our church and cook. We're like, hey, we're doing international something. Can you guys come? And a church has done that, and it's been really great. So find ways that we can, instead of seeing it like a top-down mentality, it's a, hey, let's as a community, how can we help with that, right? How can we be in each other's homes? How can we do that, all right? And what if instead of meeting for ESL classes in a church building or classroom, you met in a home? So you get in with the family and you can talk to the family, right? What if instead of organizing groups based on English proficiency level, you organize them based off of people groups or affinities? So that basically means instead of saying, okay, well, he's a level one, he's a level two, three, and they're going to be in these different classrooms, we take them in a room and say, well, these guys are all from Burma, So we want to keep them in the room, and that way the level three can help the level one, and they can help each other. So now we're training them, we're enabling them to do the same thing. And so now if we're having a evangelical conversation with level three, they can now push it down to three and to one and help them. One of the curriculums we do, I have these books that teaches English to Thai students, to Thais. So it has the English and the Thai print underneath. And then the last part of the lesson is a part of the creation of Christ story. And so when they're done reading the story in English and then they read it in Thai and they understand the story in English, they have to draw a picture about the story and tell you about it in English. So that's amazing because now they're having to not just take it in, but they have to explain it. So if you're in a setting where you've got level three, level one, you can have level three explain it to level one in English and in Thai or whatever language that you're doing, right?
It helps with the final target of planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you train level three, he's already begun the process training to be a disciple maker so that when they go and plant their own church, he already knows how to.
Yep, and he might not even be a believer yet.
Yeah.
You know, and you're already working on this developing leaders, and this is part of that discipleship, right? So now you've already started in that process, and that fits into that as well. Okay, what if we use stories from Scripture to teach the gospel, not moral lessons? Kind of like what I just mentioned, where we divide creation of Christ into five parts in that particular book. It's creation, fall, promise of a future, Jesus and then his return or the end of time. So those are the five kind of things that we do with that. And that really has been awesome because everyone's oral, it seems like, in the world, except for us. Very oral, very big. But if you think in the South, everyone wants to hear grandma's stories, grandpa's stories, you know, everyone wants to hear the war stories. Everybody wants to hear stories. So we can identify with that, where if we just change it to stories, all right? What if we measured our progress on the number of seeds sown rather than those who've come? I think that could change our perspective on anything. I mean, can you imagine your congregation coming up and just be like, man, I shared Christ with 20 people this week. But if they're focused on, we've baptized one in the last 4 months. Well, that's kind of a letdown. You know, that's kind of a bummer. But I think being faithful, because you got to realize, I mean, we got missionaries who lived in cities for 16 years and longer who won't see a single convert. And we say, well, then they need to go home because, you know, or they need to go somewhere else because clearly God's not working there. Well, God doesn't work on a timetable. So are we being faithful to sow those seeds? And that would be, I think, a great maybe shift on how we see success. Okay, and the last question, what if we looked for ways to multiply our ESL ministry rather than grow our ESL ministry? This is more like, how do we get more of them? Instead of like, how do we get more in here? How do we get more out there, basically? So we just start thinking about that. Okay, is this helpful for you guys? Are there any questions?